CSI in the World, I'm John Batchelor. From the surface of the planet Earth, Rocket Lab, a success. Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. He's an advocate of commercial space, and Rocket Lab is a great illustration. Bob, what is Rocket Lab?
Rocket Labs is the small sat rocket company that has successfully launched now some like 30 times with Electron rocket. It also has created what it calls its Photon. You could call it a tug, but it's actually a transport spacecraft for taking, after you launch on the Electron rocket, you can use the Photon to take you other places. For example, they used it for the Capstone mission to get the Capstone into lunar orbit, and they plan to use it for a Venus mission that Rocket Lab is actually building for itself. This story is more interesting. A company named Varda had hired Rocket Lab, hired four photon transport vehicles for future missions. And each one of those missions was going to be using the photon to maneuver in orbit, Varda's returnable space capsule. So what happens is it gets launched on an Electron rocket. It's attached to Photon. It maneuvers in Earth orbit. It's in orbit for a period of time, and then Photon then deorbits it, and the returnable capsule comes back to Earth and is recovered. And Varda's whole goal here is to manufacture pharmaceuticals in low Earth orbit. And the story here is that Rocket Lab has delivered the first Photon to Varda for planned launch no earlier than June 8th of this year. Now, this is going to happen soon. Now, Varda's doing is essentially picking up the research that McDonnell Douglas was doing on the space shuttle back in the 80s. And private commercial pharmaceutical research to develop certain kinds of medicines in zero gravity that can't be done on Earth. And McDonnell Douglas was on the verge of doing its first production run on the space shuttle to sell for profit when the Challenger accident happened in 86, and that ended their work. But they were on the verge of doing this. I've got links on Behind the Black to a story where I describe that. And so it seems like Varda is on the verge of doing it now. And they're doing it with their own capsule that they can afford to launch now because of the cheaper launch rates, and bring it back to Earth after a period of time in space. And they've already contracted for these capsules and four launches. And so that's what's coming in the future. And that means pharmaceuticals that can't be made on Earth but can be made in weightlessness will finally be produced. And I will point out that in 85, 86, when McDonnell Douglas was doing these tests on the shuttle, it was very clear they could make money on this, and they could sell pharmaceuticals that we need on Earth that we can't get unless we do them in space. And they just have been prevented from doing it because there hasn't been a viable space market. Well, now that exists.
This touches the Challenger accident. How so, Bob?
Well, when the Challenger accident occurred, Ronald Reagan then declared that the shuttle will no longer be used for any commercial operations. And he did that because he wanted to encourage a commercial rocket industry. The shuttle had literally destroyed the American rocket industry because it was American companies were outlawed from launching anywhere but on the shuttle. Reagan ended that. Now, it took a lot of years for the American rocket industry to finally recover, and it really took Elon Musk to do it because the companies that existed in the 80s and 90s just weren't interested in competing and creating and innovating and creating a cheap way to get to orbit. Musk was, and he took advantage of the fact that no one else was, and we have now a very viable rocket industry, and that's why this stuff is beginning to happen.
Finally. The Spitzer telescope is right now standing down. However, this is one of my favorite stories for quite some time. The rescue mission, Bob. They're gathering their forces. They're proposing to rescue Spitzer. How?
This is a small startup called Ray Space Activity. They have gotten a $250,000 development contract from the Space Force to develop the concept of a mission for resurrecting the Spitzer Space Telescope. Spitzer is an infrared telescope. It's basically a precursor of Webb. It was in orbit for about 16 years looking at infrared objects in space, just like Webb does, but a lower resolution. But infrared requires coolant to be able to do the work it's supposed to do, and eventually the coolant ran out after 7 years. They were able, for the next 11 years, to use Spitzer in what they called the warm mode, so at certain infrared frequencies they still could get data. But after a while, the spacecraft was in a solar orbit that was slowly moving it away from the Earth, and in 2000 it eventually was too far away, and they shut it down. They couldn't communicate with it anymore. So Ray has proposed, and in partnership with Harvard University, the Smithsonian, and APL, they have proposed doing a rescue mission to Spitzer. And this would basically be a robot that would fly in tandem with Spitzer and act as a relay communication satellite, because the real problem is it's too far away to communicate with effectively. That's the plan. Now, when this will happen, who knows? They're only doing a research study, but this ties into Photon, Rocket Lab's Photon and Varda's returnable capsule. It's commercial space coming up with new ideas and proposals that the government, of course, was incapable of doing in the past.
Bob, is Spitzer salvage? And does that mean that by rescuing it, you own it?
In this case, no. The way the law is written, NASA is going to claim ownership, but NASA is not going to interfere with anything that goes on here. The truth is that if Spitzer was operational, NASA might very well have issued contracts to APL or to Harvard to operate it and download data. So it's not really the situation here is no different. They would just be using it to gather science data, and no one would argue with that. The question of salvage in space is not going to be really dealt with for decades, because we don't really have a gigantic salvage operation. According to the Outer Space Treaty, anything you launch belongs to you. Whoever launches it owns it. But, how are you going to enforce such a thing if someone else wants to grab it? And it gets interesting at that point.
Italy is famous in the 19th century and early 20th century for its engineering, its skills. Italian craftsmanship was much premium, and then catastrophe in the 20th century, and since then, some have forgotten about Italy's gift. However, right now Bob is reporting on something unusual going on, stepping away from the European Space Agency. What's happened, Bob?
Italy has been one of the major players, increasingly so in the last few years, in the European Space Agency. They have worked hard to develop private companies to build rockets. The Vega rocket, for example, on Ariane Space is almost entirely built by Italian companies. They have a private company called Deorbit that's trying to work on orbital tugs and orbital space junk and servicing in orbit. And they have a few other companies, and what Italy has done is now issued a $250 million contract to a partnership of several private European companies, most of which are Italian, not all, but almost all of them are Italian, to fly a mission to test a variety of in-orbit robotic satellite servicing capabilities, just like I talked about with Ray. This would be a case with using a robot arm, being able to refuel spacecraft, do repair and replacement of parts, change orbits, and even, remove junk from orbit. And so this mission is supposedly to test those capabilities. What's interesting to me about the contract is that Italy did not go through the European Space Agency. They are a member of the Space Agency, and for decades, every project like this would always be developed and flown through ESA. Italy appears to have decided to go it alone, because it's not getting much from that partnership anymore. And that, I think, might be related to the failure of Ariane 6, which is years late and will cost too much to fly. And so therefore, all the partners of ESA are very unhappy with the rocket that ESA has dumped on them. And so this, I think, is why both Germany and the United Kingdom are encouraging private rocket companies. UK is trying to develop private spaceports. And maybe why Italy has decided to develop its own resurfacing capabilities independent of ESA. And I think that's a good thing. ESA has basically been a monumental failure in recent years, and it's time for these other countries to compete with each other.
What is Intuitive Machines?
This is one of the many American startups trying to build lunar landers, and they have a mission to go to the moon. They were originally going to be, there was hope that this mission would fly in June to the south pole of the moon. It's a private lander that is carrying payloads for NASA and others. And it would be their first flight, so it's called Nova C, the lander. It would be their first flight, so in many ways it's an engineering test mission to prove that they can do it. It appears now that there's going to be a delay, that it's not going to fly until August or September at the earliest. Part of the reason is that NASA imposed on the company a change in its landing site. They were originally going to land closer to the equator of the moon, but very recently NASA decided they should instead land on a crater very close to the south pole of the moon, and that's required some changes to their operation. And so they've had to adapt to that. So that, I think, is why the delay has occurred. There is right now a race between two different American companies to be the first to land on the moon, a private company. We've had two private companies, Israel Space IL and Japan's iSpace, both attempt and fail to do so. Two American companies, Intuitive Machines and Astrobotic, are both scheduling launches now sometime in the summer, early fall. And they've been like leapfrogging delays. And the question is, which is going to be the first to successfully do it, John?
My memory is that Stratolaunch was the genius of Paul Allen, the late co-founder of Microsoft. Is that correct, Bob?
That is correct, John.
And Stratolaunch is still with us. And Stratolaunch has scored what appears to be, in your report, a success. What is Stratolaunch?
Stratolaunch was conceived by Paul Allen as a rocket system to launch satellites into orbit or bigger payloads, using an airplane to launch off a runway and then releasing a rocket to go into orbit, much like Virgin Orbit does and much like Northrop Grumman's Pegasus rocket does. However, the plane that would be used was not going to be just like a 747 or an L-1011. It was a giant airplane they call ROC. Two salvaged 747s. It's got the largest wingspan of any plane ever, and it has been doing test flights over the last year or so. Now, when Paul Allen died, the company realized it could never get anyone to build the rocket to bring satellites into orbit, and it couldn't do it itself. It realized this plan wasn't working. And after Allen died, the new company managers decided to shift gears. And instead of trying to launch satellites, they repurposed Stratolaunch's ROC to be a test bed for hypersonic missile technology, or hypersonic flight in general. And they offered this to the military, and actually the military in the U.S. has already given them a contract to fly hypersonic test flights. And so to do this, Stratolaunch would carry the big plane, would carry what they call a Talon 1 vehicle, which attached to that would be the hypersonic missile test vehicle. And so Talon, they've been testing the capture-carry flights and takeoff and landing flights, but early this week actually, ROC took off with a Talon Zero engineering test vehicle attached to its fuselage and successfully released it for the first time, completing their first drop test. That was a success. Now, they didn't recover Talon. Their goal here was to see if the dropping would work. And so they're getting very close now to start doing hypersonic tests, fulfilling their contract with the military for doing hypersonic flight tests using ROC as an airplane, John.
NASA. We celebrate NASA once upon a time as a pioneer. And Bob has an item on his Behind the Black Site. 50 years ago this month, the last of the Saturn V's, that super rocket that led us to the moon, launched Skylab. Was that it, Bob? Skylab?
Skylab, the forgotten, glorious achievement. As I devoted a chapter to in Leaving Earth, Skylab was America's first space station. It was using a Saturn V upper stage as the station. The Saturn V was so powerful that the upper stage, if you could put no fuel in it, you could create a gigantic interior space. And in fact, the interior space of that space station, Skylab, was the largest interior space, still habitable interior space that's still ever been launched. It was so big, you know, you could fly around in it, and you could actually end up floating in the middle and not get back to the edge. It was so large. They flew three missions to Skylab. The last mission was there for half a year. Their plan had been to save it, but it came down because the sun was more active. It came down too early. And so NASA once again failed in making a very useful space facility and cheap space facility viable. They lost
50 years ago. Everybody's going in different directions. Commercial space is robust, and NASA has a successful super pressure balloon above Antarctica, but their second one has an anomaly. Is that it, Bob?
That's the nice way of putting it. It developed a leak. It was a super pressure balloon. It's a high-tech balloon for floating above in the high stratosphere. The first super pressure balloon, called Superbit, has been circumnavigating around Antarctica now for about 3-4 weeks. It's completed four circumnavigations, and it has a telescope for taking high-resolution images of galactic and nebulae in space, and I posted some of those on Behind the Black. They attempted to launch a second one that was going to do studies of cosmic rays hitting the upper atmosphere.
Right.
Shortly after the launch, it developed a leak, and they were forced to terminate the mission and have it drop down into the Pacific Ocean safely. It's a shame. This high-tech pressure balloon is not a new idea. They were doing it in the 50s, but it still is a good idea to get a telescope into high altitudes to do research, which on the ground would be difficult, John.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. We're going exploring.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.